Good day, everyone, and welcome to the K&S Second Quarter 2025 Earnings Call. My name is Lucy, and I will be your call webinar host. Please note that all attendees are currently in a listen-only mode until the Q&A portion of the call, at which point you'll have an opportunity to ask your questions. I will now hand over to Julia from K&S for some technical notes.
Ladies and gentlemen, also from my side, welcome to our call. We hope you've had a chance to review our posted slides as well as our Q2 documents available on the website. After the opening remarks by Christian Meyer, we will jump directly into the Q&A session. Some technical notes, as always. Please refer to our disclaimer on page two of the presentation. A note on data privacy: please be aware that the Teams session will be recorded, webcasted, and available as an audio replay on our homepage. People who ask the question in the Teams session should be clear that by switching on their camera and microphone, they agree to the recording and replay of video and audio sequence. Now, I'd like to hand over to Christian Meyer, our CEO, for the opening remarks.
Thank you, Julia, and welcome from my side as well. I would like to start with some explanations about our two ad hocs in context with our Q2 earnings release. Starting with the first ad hoc. On July 14, we had to publish an ad hoc on an impairment of assets. This impairment negatively impacted our Q2 group earnings and ROCE. According to IFRS, we must compare our book value, which is the CapEx spent on assets minus regular depreciation, to our DCF value. If the DCF value is above the book value, our maximum asset value is the book value. This leaves room to cope with changing estimates in prices, exchange rate, or value. If the DCF value falls below the book value due to an estimate change, our asset value will be regulated by the DCF value, which likely fluctuates every quarter. Therefore, our annual reports always include sensitivities for the impact of changes in the different estimates. The last time our DCF value temporarily fell below the book value was in Q3 2020. At that time, we had to write off 2 billion euros. Already 9 months later, the DCF value exceeded the book value. This required us to write back our assets to the book value. Our competitors' reporting is very different. According to US GAAP, our competitors must write off assets but not write back. These fluctuations won't be visible in their financial reports once they've been written off. Our impairment was mainly caused by the weaker US dollar, with the biggest impact on the DCF value now falling below the book value. We now use a rate of 1.20 per euro in our 150-year DCF model, up from $1.10 US dollar per euro. The future reaction of potash producers and customers to the weak US dollar against most currencies remains to be seen. These effects were not yet reflected in the external potash price studies by Argus used for the impairment test. Additionally, BHP's announcement of their delayed production start came after our ad hoc and is therefore not reflected in Argus price curves. Once we have decided on the long-term exchange rate, applying it to a DCF is faster than analyzing quarter and updating the forecast. The good news is that this impairment on group level will not have a significant impact on K+S Aktiengesellschaft's individual financial statements according to HGB as of December 31, 2025. Therefore, from today's perspective, our ability to pay dividends is not at risk. Now, some details on the second ad hoc. On July 29, we published an ad hoc with details on Q2, full-year EBITDA, and free cash flow. Despite missing Q2 and having a weaker US dollar-euro estimate than analysts assumed, we could confirm our full-year outlook. Second quarter EBITDA was below the prior year and your expectations. This was driven by the one-off related to long-term mining provisions, lower sales volumes due to postponed shipments and the planned earlier start of the Bethune maintenance, and the US dollar-euro exchange rate impacting earnings despite hedging, especially due to receivables needing to be evaluated with the spot rate on the reporting date. Let's turn to the full-year outlook. We are very happy that since the previous forecast was published, potash prices have continued to rise moderately. Therefore, we confirmed our previous expectations for the full year, despite a weaker US dollar for the remaining months compared to our previous outlook and your expectations. We still expect EBITDA to range between 560 and 640 million euros with a slightly positive free cash flow. For the midpoint of the EBITDA guidance, we assume that the average price level achieved in all regions and for all product groups remains stable during the second half of the year. For the upper end of the range, prices would need to increase further. Just to give you a sense of the phasing of figures for the rest of the year, keep in mind that Q1 and Q4 are our strongest quarters due to seasonality in both business segments. As a maintenance quarter, Q3 typically has the weakest EBITDA contribution. Last year, it contributed 65 million euros. We will see positive price effect in Q3 year on year, but we will also see higher personnel costs due to this collective bargaining agreement, as well as higher energy costs and negative FX effects. I'm looking forward to answering your questions together with my colleagues Jens and Julia, and I will now hand over to the operator to start the Q&A sessions.
Thank you, Christian. At this time, we'll conduct the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please click the raise hand icon at the top of your screen to enter the queue. Please state your company affiliation when asking your question. Additionally, KNS would like you to answer your questions one by one. So if you have multiple questions, please ask your question at a time, and KNS will answer it first. After that, you will have the opportunity to ask further questions. This brings us to the first question of Christian Slein.
Yes, good morning, Julia and team, and Christian. Christian, hope you can hear me.
Yeah, good.
Okay. Perfect. So, two questions. First, I noticed that in Q2, sales in Latin America were some minus 10% down year on year. How much of that is FX and how much of that is lower volumes? And in that context, how are volumes at this point developing into in Latin America heading into the key application season?
With Latin America, we had some lower volumes, mainly based to optimize our regional mix. That's very important to understand. And with regard to the FX effects, on a cash flow basis, we are nearly hedged, but from the perspective of the receivables, there we finally realized some effects. And that's very important to keep in mind.
And on current trading slash demand out of Latin America, how is that developing?
Yeah, the current demand, especially from Latin America, we are currently at a quiet season. We are in between the seasons, but we expect a strong demand also from for the second half of the year. And what's very positive, we are in between the seasons, but we still see stable prices.
Okay, perfect. My second question would be on the your smaller business. The refill business for de-icing was pretty slow in Q2, obviously on the back of a past mild winter. Would you see this coming back in Q3, or would this rather be a Q4 event with possibly some more winter events kicking in against a no-comparison base?
With the de-icing business, we expect a normal year for this year. As you already mentioned, we, due to the warm winter last year, the early procurement was a little bit lower, but for the rest of the year, we expect a normal sales.
But biggest comeback in Q4.
Yeah, absolutely. Q4 is the biggest one due to the upcoming winter.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Christian. Our next question comes from Michael. Please proceed.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question, Michael Schiffing, Auto BHF. Hello, everyone. My first question is rather on the supply side, looking into 26 and what you see also currently for the rest of the year. I mean, we started the year first half discussing on Russian and Belarusian supply curtailments. If my statistics are right, I'm looking at here, we are rather talking 12% up the rail shipments year to date, July. So I wonder whether you can shed some more light how you see the Russian-Belarusian supply evolving second half and also looking in 26, and maybe also related to that, what are you making out of the, let's say, in the meantime, approved import tariffs on Russian NPK, how this is affecting your European business looking into also next year, and maybe also related to that on the supply side, the news from BHP, you mentioned this already, deferring commissioning to mid-27. So in general, the picture for 26 on the supply side. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe starting with the second half of 2025, where we still see a strong demand, and we'll see high volumes from the supply side. But if there are some challenges from the supply side, then we won't see the business won't be able to deliver all volumes that are asked finally from the demand side. With regard to 2026, we will see what happens in 2026, but we expect, especially from Russia and Belarus, that they are very stable compared to the 2024 level. We will see some more volumes from Laos. We won't see any volumes from BHP, as you already mentioned. So additional volumes coming to the markets, small volumes, finally will be eaten up by the increasing of demand. So the market in 2026, we also expect that this will be, the supply and demand will be in balance, some risk like in the current year from the supply side.
Thanks for that. The second one is on your cost base. Also looking maybe into next year and the second half, you highlighted rather high energy costs, and hence I think you also reported a significant increase in energy costs. I think roughly 36% first half, 60 million up compared to the first half last year. So now looking into current spot rates, which came down significantly over the recent months in TTF. And also what we have learned from the German government when it comes to gas storage levy, which I think will be abandoned starting 2026. Some more color on how you see your cost base, your energy cost base, but maybe also other costs evolving looking into next year. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. So maybe for this year, we are hedged at 50% for Q3 and for 70% for Q4. At the price of 40 euros per megawatt hour. So at the moment, we are profiting from a lower spot price, but you also have to keep in mind the spot prices you see have to be added by a surcharge of 2 to 3 euros. So this is actually the price we have to pay. And with regard to next year, of course, we have already hedged a portion of 50% at a price slightly below 40 euros per megawatt hour. And we would profit from the initiatives of the new government with regards to the gas levy. So this is a positive effect, but we will remain at a relatively high energy cost level. So some relief, but not that big.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And other cost items? So personnel, I think we should have seen, I mean, starting April, we have seen the new collective bargain agreement hitting your P&L. So next year, probably not the same kind of order of magnitude of increase, right?
So the bargaining agreement is for 2 years. We have an increase of personnel costs, which is roughly about around 10 million per quarter. So this is the effect we have already reflected for next year. And so we will have an increase in energy and or slight decrease for next year in energy costs, but yeah, stable personal costs and all other factors remain the same.
Okay,
but
thank you.
That is at the level of this year.
Thanks. That's all my questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Michael. And our next question comes from the line of Angelina. Please proceed.
Hello, this is Angelina from JP Morgan. Thank you for taking my questions. I will have two questions, please. And the first one is a follow-up on the previous question around the market outlook for 2026. So you have commented on your expectations with regards to supply, and I want to understand a bit more on demand, because it seems that based on what we've seen here today, demand has been quite strong and the market has been able to absorb all the extra volumes that came out of Russia and Belarus from the year-on-year perspective. And also we heard from your peers in North America recently upgrading their guidance expectations for demand globally this year. So with that in mind, how should we think about demand growth next year? Should it be slower demand growth compared to this year, or do you think it could be in line with this year, just to put it in context a bit better, this supply picture you have described?
And with regard to U.S., right, we see an increase in supply, but also the demand side, we see the application of the additional volumes, and that's very important. And with regard to the next year, we also expect that the additional supply will be finally eaten up by the additional demand. So we expect also for the next year an increase of the demand of around about 2% that would require around about 1.6 million tons in addition from the supply side. So for this year and also for next year, as I already mentioned, we expect that the supply and demand will be absolutely in balance, with more risk on the supply side.
Understood. Thank you very much. And the second question is more around the financials. So could you maybe give us a bit more context about how you think on the dividend right now? So of course, we have the dividend policy that is a free cash flow based payout, and we have your adjusted free cash flow guidance for the year, which is slightly positive. But for example, you know, given that you are in quite a significant CapEx cycle, free cash flow numbers can vary quite a bit because it's just slightly above zero. So with that in mind, how are you going to think about the dividend payout? For example, given that the market environment is quite good, would you consider maintaining the dividend in absolute terms somewhere close to the last year's level? Or in general, if you could explain how you think around that, it would help.
Yeah, okay. Yes, we have a clear dividend policy that we are pay a dividend in a range of 30 to 50% of the free cash flow. And if you have a look to the consensus free cash flow currently, then you will end up at a dividend between 6 and 10 cents. Per share. The final decision we will make in March next year about the dividends, but you should keep in mind that we have announced that we have a high CapEx program with the Werra 2060 project for the next, or at least until the end of 2027, and that in total will finally be included in our decision.
Understood. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Angelina. And our next question comes from Oliver. We now proceed. Oliver, please ensure that your line is unmuted.
Usual mistake. Thank you for reminding me. Thank you for taking my questions. A couple of them remain. Can you elaborate about the price of salt, of rock salt, given that demand is rather sluggish, but still prices seem to hold up rather well? Is that something structural? Is that something that may pass? That would be my first question. Any thoughts on development and future development of the salt price would be helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, Oliver. And we are very happy with our small but very nice salt business. And we have finally higher prices compared to previous years, and also better netbacks in total.
and that we expect with the discussions we have with the market also for the next year.
Okay. Second question is about your long-term mining obligations. They have increased, I guess, using different interest rates could be the thing that was behind that. They seem to have, I also seem to have not only a balance sheet, but also a P&L impact. You said it was around about 10 million euros. How that does that work? I thought the P&L impact would be like the service costs. Is that still true, or is the 10 million somewhere, let's say, a residue of what happened in the balance sheet?
So the effect is twofold with regards to the effects in the EBITDA. This is at our inactive sites, and there it's not in the operating earnings or the operating expenses, so to say. And we had different measures actually for monitoring and recultivation. So this was the smaller part of it with an effect on the EBITDA. And from the long-term perspective, we have a very long-lasting time period we are looking at. This also with regard to the DCF model. And if you change, and you have a lot of assumptions in that model, and if you change any of this assumption, it could have an effect. And so it was, so to say, an effect of different assumptions that have changed and that led to the changes in our balance sheet.
To be clear, the 10 million, is that cash relevant in the P&L, or is that a non-cash item?
It's a non-cash item.
Okay, thank you for that. And lastly, about obviously the elephant in the room was the 2 billion impairment charge. And that was, according to you, triggered by the changes, mainly in the changes of FX rates that you used. What specific, I know about the 120 that's, because you stated that, but what's the source of that? Because you use that obviously for, let's say, your 150-year DCF. So what kind of FX rate? It's not the spot rate, obviously. So what kind of assumption goes into that 120? And how fast can that change, and what would trigger a change there?
Yeah, that could change, as we have seen it, for example, in 2020 and 2021. That was more price-related, but also there we saw some FX effects there in 2020. We also had the 1.20 in the calculation. Where is the 1.20 coming from? We look at the spot rate, but mainly on the futures for the US dollar. And then you have to make a decision where the US dollar will end up over the next years, up to the 120 years. That's a rough calculation. It's a clear calculation within our model. So we are absolutely in line with the previous calculations. And if you, for example, read the 100s plus from yesterday or today, there was a big discussion between the different FX experts. They see the US dollar between 1.13 and 1.25. And so with our 1.18, 1.20, we are absolutely in the range of the expectations of the capital markets. So it's not the spot rate, it's more what happens within the next year, what are the expectations. And there we are more or less in the midpoint.
Thank you. That's all for my questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Oliver.
Thank you very much, Oliver. And our next question comes from Tristan. Tristan, you may now begin.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. Just one. I just wanted to understand better your guidance for EBITDA for 2025. I think you said 330 is your midpoint ASP assumption. But in Q2, I think we're already at 336, and we had price rises in the second quarter, which I imagine will hit your P&L with a lag in Q3 and Q4. So I just wanted to understand whether you're assuming price decreases in Q3 and Q4 to come to that 330 average that you're talking about, or maybe there's something I'm missing. Thanks.
Thanks for this question. What we expect finally for the midpoint is that the price level that we currently achieved will be stable for the second half of the year, as you already mentioned. What's very important, 330 euro that we expect for the whole year is the basis that we see increasing prices, US dollar prices. But around about 50% of our volumes are exported to the US dollar market. So the increasing prices will be eaten up by the FX expectations, US dollar FX expectations. And the ASP doesn't include, finally, the hedging position that will compensate some of these volumes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Tristan. We'll now take the next question, which comes from Aaron. Aaron, you may now begin.
Hello. Hi, good morning. I have three questions, please. First, could you provide an update on the current situation at Bethune and explain perhaps if the logistic issues are behind us now?
Bethune, sorry. With regard to Bethune, we are in budget and in time from our current perspective. We are very happy with the additional investments we are now planning. As we explained, the ramp up that we want the site to be ramped up to 4 million tons by the end of the 30s. And with 2030, we expect to be able to ramp up until 3 million tons. And there's nothing new. We are absolutely.
But you were referring to the ship that was postponed from the end of Q2 into Q3, probably, and the logistics there. That is nothing special. We always have that, that ships can leave one day later. Yeah, and we also work saying that we have logistical challenges in the second quarter, but these were mainly in Germany with regards to low water levels. You know that we are not transporting that much via barges. It's a low percentage point, but if in Germany there are low water levels, you have a higher pressure on the Deutsche Bahn system, and we just felt that, but it was not a big thing in Q2.
I believe in the ad hoc you mentioned a longer than expected break at Bethune. That's what I was referring.
No. That was just we started earlier with the maintenance. So we saw it already in June and not in July. That depends on the summer holiday seasons in Canada, and then we optimize the time when we are making maintenance. That's regular. You won't see any impact on the year on the annual basis.
So we always have three weeks. Maintenance in Bethune, and this year we did 1 week in June and 2 weeks in July. And last year we did 3 weeks in July. Yeah, and that was the difference.
So that should provide a benefit to Q3 EBITDA, in fact.
You still have 2 weeks in Q3, yeah, so still a maintenance quarter, but a little bit of benefit.
Yeah.
My second question is on volumes, because your Q2 volumes were 100,000 tons lower on a year-over-year basis, but you kept the guidance range of 7.5 to 7.7. So what factor should enable you to perhaps reach the upper end? We talk about stronger demand, so that could perhaps be a benefit, but also we think about more on the mid to lower end of the guidance today after what happened in Q2.
Yeah, with our volumes, finally, we see a strong demand. So from the demand side, we don't see any risks. That's also why we think that we will be able to catch up logistical challenges, issues that you have just explained over the total year. So we think that we are very happy with the outlook for the volumes. It's a realistic outlook, though.
A final one, just on the cost. I wanted to follow up what you mentioned before. Am I correct saying so that you expect stable personal cost in 26? Energy, you are hedged 50% at 40, so energy should be lower on a year-over-year basis if we remain at these levels. But then you mentioned flat energy costs, which was referring to electricity. Is that correct?
We didn't differentiate between the two portions, but I would say that's more or less fair to say. But the effect for next year is very limited.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Aaron. And team, our next question comes from David. David, your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. It's just a quick one on the mining provisions on the balance sheet. So it mentions in the release that the interest rates that are used to discount this provision have significantly increased, and yet the mining provision itself has also increased. So I'm just curious as to what's the what are the moving parts in there, please?
Yeah, as I already explained, it's different assumptions. You are totally right. We, to some extent, benefited from the higher interest rate for the discount, actually. But it refers mainly to the recultivation of our tailings piles. There you have different assumptions, and this reflects to freight rates, to material, to the way you cover those tailings piles. And there we had changes, and with regards to the long period we are looking at, they are quite significant, as we reflected in our balance sheet, and what you can see there.
Okay, thank you. But there's nothing FX related in there. It's
an actual change to the no FX.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, David. And team, we have a follow up from Oliver. Please proceed.
Opening the mic first, I learned. Just another follow-on on basically on future potash pricing. When you talked about the impairments, you also reflected on what is happening at your competitors due to the fact that the US dollar is not the currency that's normally used as a cost item in the production of potash, because that's located elsewhere. You said the supply will be probably outmatched even by the demand, or will be even matched by demand next year. So the path should be clear for people raising prices. However, I haven't seen any of that, neither in, let's say, spot rates, nor in the communication of your competitors yet, that they are striving for, let's say, a compensation of what they will be losing due to the adverse changes in FX. And I also don't see that obviously reflected in your outlook, which was kept stable. There's no outlook by K plus S on 2026 yet, and I understand that. But when do you expect those likely price increases that you allude to when talking about a probable reversal of the impairment, probably also only partly, when do you expect them to kick in? That would be my question.
Yeah. It was very important to know that we are currently in between the seasons, but you're absolutely right that finally also our competitors are facing challenges with the weaker US dollar. That's, for example, Mosaic also explained that their cost position is higher compared to prior year. So because every competitor is producing outside of the US dollar, not in the US, and all of them are finally facing challenges with a weaker US dollar. So currently we don't see it in the spot rates, but on the long run we expect that there should be a reaction in the prices. When we will see this, you can't calculate directly the switch of the weaker US dollar to the prices. But at the end, if you have a look to the earnings of all the competitors, then there's finally a need to increase the prices due to the weaker US dollar. But I think at least if it will stay at this low level, the US dollar, you should see that at least in the spring season.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Oliver. And we have a question from Axel. Axel, your line is open. Please proceed.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hi, everyone. I just have a follow-up to the mining provisions. So these mining provisions have been relatively constant between 2017 and 2023, almost 0.9 to 1 billion. Since then, they have risen by about 40% to now 1.4. So the question is, what are the reasons behind that? So what is the exact meaning of Haldenverwahrung or tailings containment? And where is this provision journey going in the next, in the mid to long term?
Okay. So we're looking at a lot of tailings piles that have to be covered. And there you have different concepts to cover those tailings piles. Therefore, you have to conduct application procedures with the authorities, and they give feedback on the material you can bring on the way you cover actually the heat. Then you have different assumptions because we are looking at a very long period of time. And so we made several adoptions, and this is a process that is almost happening every year. Now the effects were a little bit higher, but you cannot deduct from the development you saw now future increases in the mining provisions. You can also have the opposite effect. It's just the fluctuation we see almost every year. This year it was great.
Okay, thank you very much.
Very important maybe to add that we still expect cash outflows for the next 10 years of around about 250 million euros. That's because of the long projection we finally have over 800-900 years.
Thank you.
Thank you, Axel. And ladies and gentlemen, once more, if you would like to ask a question, that's through the raise hand icon at the top of your screen. Excellent. Team, it appears there are currently no further questions. This concludes the Q&A and today's call. Thank you all for joining today and have a great day.
Thanks to all of you. Bye.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.